The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years' experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We're kind of used to hearing carols like the First Noel and so forth in church, but really, that was not the practice until more or less this point in history when lessons and carols were introduced.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and welcome to a special Christmas-themed edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. That was Timothy McDonald, Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College. We'll talk with him a little bit later on in today's program about the Christmas service of lessons and carols. First, we're joined once again by Dr. Dwight Lindley. He is Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale and also your teacher for the new online course on A Christmas Carol. Dr. Lindley's talked with us throughout the year about Charles Dickens and some of his works, and today the focus turns toward A Christmas Carol, and of course you can learn more in the online course at online.hillsdale.edu. Dr. Lindley, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
How did Dickens come to write A Christmas Carol?
Sure. It's the year 1843, and He's advanced in his career. He's around 30 years old. He's written some successful novels already. But this report comes out. It's called the second report of there was a committee on the urban poor. It was especially concerned with children. And this committee report comes out investigating the state of poverty in cities in the UK. And it just horrified many people, but especially Dickens, mm-hmm. who, for a number of reasons we went over last time, very sensitive to the plight of the poor. He had undergone severe poverty himself in his childhood. And so he's determined in 1843 to do something about this. His first thought is, well, I need to write a piece of nonfiction and wake people up and say, look around you. This is real. We need to care about this. But then he starts thinking, no, I think I can do something that would be even more powerful. So a big part of the impetus for writing Christmas Carol is to wake up his audience, which he has already earned at this point, wake them up to the conditions of people living around them. It's a socially minded novel. It's not just that, though. That would be to boil it down to just a mere social message. I think it's better than that. It's more than that. That's mm-hmm. what I mean. It has its own integrity. It's not just, you know, a stick to beat people with to get them to do something. But it is motivated in that way, partially.
What are some of the basic themes that we experience when reading A Christmas Carol?
Sure. Well, I think at the heart of it, and the most present reality in A Christmas Carol, is the transformation of Scrooge and the possibility of what we could even call conversion of a kind, which is, you know, it reads in some ways almost like a narrative of religious conversion. Mm-hmm. There is a religious framework to it, which you can talk about in a minute, but it's not, you know, strictly, it's not exactly like the conversion of Paul in the book of Acts. It's not exactly like that, but it has that kind of character, and part of the meaning of the book is this sincere belief that all kinds of people have a chance to change. Nobody's beyond the pale. Everybody can become something better than they are. This is something that is possible for humans. Yes, through supernatural influence and all this, but that it's possible. You have to believe that it's possible. So that kind of hope for conversion or transformation for anyone is something that he wants to stress. Another theme that we think of with A Christmas Carol is really that this kind of transformation can come through a dynamic encounter with your past self. So one of the scenes that people will remember from A Christmas Carol, even if it was years ago or if they've only seen a TV version or whatever, is that Scrooge is forced to meet, by the ghost of Christmas past, an early version of himself, himself as a child in the sadness, frankly, of his life back then. And Scrooge is made to actually feel sympathetic for his childhood self. And then that is the first of many experiences which bring him out of himself and give him this opportunity to become what he isn't, and to change, to transform. I think that's something that he's really interested in, is the way that the right kind of encounter with your own past self can become an impetus to change. You know, this is something that's, I think, really true, that making peace with your past self is something that many, many adults, you know, have always experienced as something that's necessary for happiness to deal with and move forward. Anyway, so that's something he's interested in. A parallel kind of motive for transformation and change is also dramatized in this book, and that's an encounter with the poor, or what the gospel calls the least of these. You know, Jesus says at a certain point, actually this is in Matthew 25, if memory serves, whatsoever you did to the least of these, you did unto me. So that is really deeply in Dickens's consciousness, and he really believes that in the lowest of the low, you can have encounters with the transcendent and the divine, which can change you and can actually wake you up and make a new life possible. So that's something that's at the heart of this book, too, that he thinks is just true. And he wants his readers to have that experience. Last thing I would mention that's an important theme here is the way that A Christmas Carol talks about, quote unquote, keeping Christmas. From the start, it's said that Scrooge doesn't keep Christmas, which is a Victorian way of talking, an old fashioned way of talking. Whereas by the end of this, after he's undergone his transformation, Scrooge is ready to keep Christmas. Mm-hmm. And he says, I will keep Christmas all the year. And this is actually part of the mysterious heart of this book, is that he realizes what Christmas is all about, as we tend to say nowadays. And he swears that he will keep this close to his heart. He realizes the divine heart of Christmas, you know, this child coming into the world who is God, which changes the way you see everything and the way you live. I'm going to keep this near to me all the year long. I'm going to have Christmas all year. I'm going to keep it in that sense. So those are some big themes.
Why don't I ask quickly, you told us in a previous conversation about how important family is to Dickens in many of his works. In A Christmas Carol, Scrooge has no immediate family, and yet his extended family keeps wanting to draw him in. He refuses until the end, of course. What do we make of that and how Dickens deals with Scrooge's family in this work?
That's a good question. His nephew, Fred, keeps on pestering him, or is pestering him at the start. Come and spend Christmas with us. And he says, bah, humbug, you know, I'll see you in hell, I think is what he says, actually. And he says some worse things than that, maybe, too. So he's doing his best to alienate his family, such as he has, right? Doesn't have all that much family, as you say. And yet they're doing their best to love him in spite of that. And it's partially their love of him in spite of himself that helps change him. in the course of his journeys that these ghosts bring on him on during this story, he's brought back into contact with that family mm-hmm. who love him in spite of himself, and getting better than he deserves becomes a part of the occasion for his path back. And so, and that's something that's important, I think, about family to Dickens. And I think this is interesting, even in light of his life, right? I said in our first section of this series that he did wrong by his family in some important ways. But according to his own understanding, family gives us better than we deserve in spite of our screwing it up.
Dr. Dwight Lindley back again to talk with us about A Christmas Carol. You can find his online course at online.hillsdale.edu. It's A Christmas Carol. Dr. Lindley, thanks so much for joining us. Up next, we talk with Jordan Wales from Hillsdale's Theology Department about the Trinity and the concept of person. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading has the perfect gift this holiday season. Car wash packages starting at only $11. They make great stocking stuffers and are excellent gifts for those who are a little hard to shop for. Choose from four different car wash packages. Buy five car wash packages and get one free. Or buy 10 and get three free. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
30 years ago, Simpson University arrived in Reading with a promise to serve the North State. Warmly welcomed by this far Northern California community, we forged lasting partnerships, serving our neighbors locally as well as globally. Building on our promise, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Our promise to be the gateway to world service begins in our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing up this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Casa 1910. If you've been curious, perhaps even tempted, to try a Mexican puro, this is the stick to get. An absolute pleasure to smoke, and honestly, one of my all-time top tens. The Casa 1910. Get yours today. Tobacco and Brew, Reading, California.
North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive is proud to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the armed forces. North Valley Distributing, serving both the electrical and electronics industries, a one-stop shopping experience. North Valley Distributing at 3081 Crossroads Drive. Call 530-222-1500. 530-222-1500. Proud to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Around the end of the year and this Christmas season, we want to say thank you to some of our great radio affiliates all across the country, like WKAN, 1320 AM and 101.3 FM in Kankakee, Illinois. Also KXEL, News Talk 1540 in Waterloo, Iowa. WBCK, 95.3 FM in Battle Creek, Michigan. WIBX, 950 AM and 106.9 FM in Utica, New York. WVOS, AM 1240, 92.5 FM and 94.9 FM, the voice of Sullivan and the Catskills in New York. Thank you for being part of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour family. If you want to find an affiliate in your area, radiohour.hillsdale.edu and click on the Affiliates tab. We're joined by Dr. Jordan Wales. He is Associate Professor of Theology and John and Helen Kuzmarski Chair in Theology at Hillsdale College. Dr. Wales, thanks for joining us today. As we approach Christmas time, we talk to you about the concept of person and the Trinity.
And again, it's always helpful at the beginning of our discussions to define our terms. What do we mean when we talk about the Trinity?
What we mean when we talk about the Trinity has its roots in the history of Judaism and Christianity. So it's helpful to start with a little bit of the Jewish background here to what we even mean when we talk about God.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time in the Old Testament, by the time you've reached the era of the prophets, what you really have is a somewhat unique conviction within Judaism. And that is that the Jews are worshiping a God that they believe can't really be encompassed by human thought, a God who can only be known if he reveals himself. And so long before Sigmund Freud and Ludwig Feuerbach and Richard Dawkins and others have proposed that God is really just a bigger, stronger, invisible, and more capricious version of ourselves, a kind of big, invisible Superman, the adult version of a stuffed animal or comfort blanket, long before that was proposed, the Jews were well aware of that risk. Hmm. And so within Judaism is the conviction that the God in which we Jews believe is not something we have invented, not a big, powerful thing that we represent by a lion or a bull or a bull with the head of a lion or a lion with the head of a man or any of these ancient Near Eastern combinations that try to indicate something big and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
He is not like the God of the Greeks, which are, I don't know, more glamorous versions of ourselves, but with just sort of larger appetites and a house that's higher in the sky.
Right.
No, in Judaism, this is the God who can't quite be spoken, the God who exceeds the capacity of our minds, and yet this is the God who, in Exodus chapter 3, says, I have heard your sufferings, and I have come down to set you free. So this is the God who comes down, who graciously, lovingly discloses himself when he couldn't be known. So you have kind of two convictions in there. You have the transcendence of God. He exceeds. He's,
mm-hmm.
he's not antithetical to our thinking, but he exceeds our concepts. And yet this is the God, the personal God who discloses himself. He's not just a cosmic mystery out there. He is not the unmoved mover of Aristotle. This is the God who very much opens himself to be known by others, but that's something that requires his initiative and his assistance.
Talking with Jordan Wales about the Trinity, so what does that mean when we think about it in the context of Christianity?
Christianity, of course, the first Christians were Jews themselves, and so you have this same conviction about the transcendent God who reveals himself. And therefore, the drama sometimes was called the salvation history of creation, the giving of the law, and then in Christian belief, God himself living a human life for human salvation so that humans might enter into a share in his divine life, otherwise known as heaven. That the drama, the unfolding history of God's acts is understood within Christianity as revealing something of whom of who God is, that God does outwardly as he is inwardly. Not that his acts in history are absolutely adequate to his interior life, but they are revelations of his interior life. So revelation goes beyond simply what God has said to include also what he does. His outer acts reflect his interior life and character. And so, in the New Testament, you have something rather strange. You have this guy running around to whom are attributed godlike acts. He has command over the winds and the waves. Mm-hmm. He forgives sins. Who can forgive sins but God alone? Those around him ask. And so everything's pointing to him being God. He even does other crazy things like rise from the dead. But at the same time, he's talking to someone else. So Jesus talks to his Father.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a third shadowy someone on the scene, the Holy Spirit, whom Jesus will send. And the Holy Spirit is not the Father, and it's not Jesus, but it comes from the Father. So you have these three figures in the New Testament. And yet, you have again the conviction of monotheism. There is one God who is not simply a bigger, stronger version of ourself, but can be known only as he discloses himself. And yet he discloses himself in a way that looks really suspiciously like three gods, or maybe one God with two assistants, or one God with two appendages. And yet those easy solutions, the solution, well, Jesus is a kind of intermediary. He's mm-hmm. an angel who maybe has some godlike properties, or he's been given he's maybe a plenipotentiary ambassador. What Jesus says is as good as if God said it. But he's not God. Those ways of kind of rationalizing the monotheism with the belief in the God's historical self-revelation, those were rejected within early Christianity, because within early Christianity there was the strong conviction that when we worship Jesus as God, we really mean what we say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something mysterious here, but we're not going to give up on meaning what we say just because it's a little bit difficult to understand. So the discipline of theology within early Christianity is described by various people, but most famously by Augustine, as faith-seeking understanding. So one has received a certain self-revelation by God, one has received God, and one strives to understand him. So we have these three, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, but yet these three must, in some mysterious but fundamental way, they must be one.
We'll pause right there. Back in a moment, we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Jordan Wales about the Trinity and the concept of person on this special Christmas-themed edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. In the meantime, we encourage you to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. You can find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu. When you get there, you'll have access to all of the audio that Hillsdale College produces. That's The Larry Arn Show, Hillsdale Dialogues, the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast, now available, Imprimis, Hillsdale's K-12 Classical Education Podcast, and, of course, older episodes of this show, the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You can subscribe and get new episodes delivered right to your device. More information available, too, at podcast.hillsdale.edu for the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Christmas lights do more than glitter and glow. They represent a gift of love given a long time ago. This holiday season, join Historic Haws Farms on a magical journey through Lights on the Farm, presented by the award-winning light designers at Reading Lights. Climb aboard Haws Express Railways or travel by country-covered wagons through a spectacular interactive holiday light show where childhood memories and family traditions come alive. Enjoy a simple country Christmas with cocoa, candy apples, carolers, and a visit with Santa. And as a very special gift from Greg and Nicola Haws, every Thursday night, children 12 and under are free with special discounts discount pricing for seniors and veterans every Sunday. It's the Hawes family way of saying thank you and Merry Christmas. Limited tickets are available, so hurry. Reserve your tickets today at historichawsfarms.com and make a memory. Start a new tradition with your family at Historic Hawes Farms Lights on the Farm, where they've been celebrating the holidays for over 150 years.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Taggart and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG-guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no-side-effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult-to-treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by. Get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Join Token's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as hosts Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Dr. Jordan Wales on this Christmas-themed episode of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, talking about the Trinity and the concept of person.
So we have, again, three in one, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. What is the understanding that three separate things can all be the same?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where things get interesting. And I'll be happy to talk in a moment about how this has also in turn affected our own understanding of human persons.
Yes.
But
yeah.
First, how can these three be one? Well, that they have to be one was held simply as a basic conviction. But then there is some information, I suppose you could say, about how these three are one simply from the way that they call themselves or that God calls himself in the scriptures. So you have Jesus refers to himself as the Father's only Son, or the prologue to the Gospel of John calls him the only begotten Son of the Father. And so early Christian reflection on the relationship between the Father and the Son, what does it mean to be the Son of the Father, and how can, we'll just talk about the two, the Father and the Son for now, how can mm-hmm. these two be one? How can we be monotheists and yet believe in a distinction of Father and Son? Well, again, the transcendence of God. God is not just faster, bigger, and higher in the sky. God is actually immaterial. incorporeal, has no body, doesn't eat. In the Old Testament, in the later books of the Old Testament, God kind of gently, humorously, well, not always gently, but mocks the idea that he's in it for the sacrifices. He says, like, look, do I have nostrils that I smell the smoke? Do you really think that I lap up the blood of bulls? Like, this isn't what it's about. These are means to a further end of relation with me. I'm not actually being bought by bulls here. I'm not like the gods that devour flesh.
We've been talking with Jordan Wales from Hillsdale's Theology Department about the Trinity. Jordan, what does it mean to say God is a father who has begotten a son?
Athanasius of Alexandria, writing in the 4th century, points out, well, what do we mean by begetting? And some of Athanasius's early opponents say, well, we know darn well what we mean by begetting, and that's what Zeus does. Mm-hmm. He does quite a bit of it, often against his wife's wishes, but that's not really what we think our God does. And Athanasius says, no, you're thinking about it in the wrong way. We shouldn't constrain a divine begetting to human bodily categories. So if you take away all the elements of time, all the elements of corporeality, what are you left with? The relation between the Father and Son, by which they are one God, is a relation of eternal begetting. Well, what is begetting? Through begetting, a human father gives human life to his human son. And so what is the relation of eternal begetting between the Father and the Son? The Father and Son exist as one God. Indeed, they exist at all, right? Because the Father is simply Father, and the Son is simply Son. If there were no relation between them, poof, they wouldn't be at all. So the very life by which God exists is the life of the Father pouring out his life eternally to the Son, and the Son eternally receiving life from the Father. You could say that the inner life of God is an eternal relation of self-gift, in which God as Father is the giver. And kind of at the opposite pole of that life, God the Son is the receiver. So here you have distinction. There's a giver and there's a receiver of life, but you also have oneness, that the giver is entirely, exhaustively defined by the self-gift to the Son, and the Son is entirely, exhaustively defined by receiving that self-gift. One does not exist without the other. It's almost like there is one magnet, there are two poles. There's the positive pole and the negative pole. If you take away the negative pole, you aren't left with just a positive pole. You're left with no magnetic field at all. And so the divine life, at least as far as Father and Son are concerned, and let's just say there's a third pole for the Holy Spirit, but I'm trying to keep it simple, the divine life is the life of complete self-gift and complete reception, by which Father and Son are defined in terms of one another, and by which they exist at all. So while we exist as persons who can engage in relationships in which we try to share ourselves with one another, God exists as three persons who exist not simply with a capacity to engage in relationships, but exist by their relations with one another. And were it not for those relations, they would not exist, because in a certain sense, they are those relations.
Dr. Jordan Wales with us, assistant professor of theology here at Hillsdale College, here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. How does the Trinity help shape our concept of the person?
This is actually something very interesting that that we aren't always really aware of. Our word person comes from the Latin persona. And the original meaning of that was it had to do with persona, sounding through, and it referred to a mask worn by actors who could speak through the mask. Very similarly, in Greek, the closest analog to person in Latin at that time was prosopon. They sound similar, but they have actually different derivations. Prosopon refers to around the ops, the eyes. It's the area of the face. So prosopon can mean face, but it also referred to, in the theater, the mask. What's common to persona and prosopon in that kind of ancient pre-Christian notion is the very externality of it. In the Roman tradition, persona started as meaning mask. It came to mean social role, And so, for instance, a slave was in a certain way not a person. And here we're not talking about person in the way we talk now, but
right.
To be a persona meant to have a certain role, a place in society. And if you didn't have a place, you weren't considered a persona. You were still human, but you weren't a persona. You had no place.
Dr. Jordan Wales with us from Hillsdale's Theology Department talking about the Trinity. Dr. Wales, so how does Christianity change that perspective of person?
It's with Christianity that we come to think of person as something fundamental rather than as a set of exterior behaviors or a certain social role. It's almost like the meaning of persona moves inward. It begins as a mask, the role you have in a play. It advances to the role you have in society. It advances further to mean the kind of character, the sort of the interior tendencies that someone has that are manifested in their acts. But finally, with Christianity, person comes to mean the knowing, loving locus of interior life that can share itself with others. And we can see how that notion of person as a self-giving, mm-hmm. self-disclosing individual is rooted in the Trinitarian notion of God as one God with three persons, not three prosopa, not three masks or three faces, but because what God does outwardly, his countenance or his outward actions, his mm-hmm. role as God's outward role reflects God's interior life, that principle of God, of revelation that comes from the Jewish tradition, then that means that when we see God acting in three different ways, it's not a kind of divine puppet show where one hand is rapidly changing different puppets and one puppet pretends to talk to another, but it's all the same hand working them. No, when the Son talks to the Father, when the Son humanly speaks to the Father, we're catching there a little bit of an echo, put into human terms, but an echo of the Son eternally receiving life from the Father and being and sharing that one life with the Father. So from the Trinity, even though the Trinity is these three persons that depend absolutely on one another, mm-hmm. we get the notion of the independent, individual, human persons, and that have a kind of interiority and individuality, a self-possession, who exercise their personality by sharing with one another, by entering into lives of compassion toward one another.
That's Dr. Jordan Wales. He is Associate Professor of Theology and John and Helen Kuzmarski Chair in Theology here at Hillsdale College as we spend this Christmas season talking about the Trinity and the concept of person. Dr. Wales, thanks so much for joining us. Up next, Timothy McDonald, Director of Sacred Music at Hillsdale, will talk to us about the Christmas service of Lessons and Carols. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
This holiday season, join the all-new tradition of lights and festivities for the entire family at Redding Garden of Lights.
Taking place November 17th through January 7th at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens.
At the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Explore over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens featuring over 1 million lights. Plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more.
Redding Garden of Lights, presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding.
Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi,
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back, and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta, and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Hey, what's going on in Redding, California? This is Tony Horde with Better Homes and Gardens Results Real Estate. Be sure and tune in to KCNR on your radio dial Wednesdays at 5 p.m. for Living in the North State. Together with my three amazing co-hosts, Rich Howell, Bill Woodford, and Mindy Cochran, we'll be interviewing professionals in the industry and taking your calls to answer all your questions and have a great time doing so. Talk to you then, Redding.
New course.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. Find older episodes of this show along with other Hillsdale audio programs.
We're joined now by Dr. Timothy McDonald. He is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College. Dr. McDonald, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We talk today about lessons and carols, and it's around the time of the year that makes some sense. Tell us first, what is Lessons and Carols, and what's its basic structure?
Sure, yeah. Lessons and Carols is a service of music and readings from Scripture that was devised at the end of the 19th century in England. It's basically a kind of paraliturgical service, which means that it's not an official liturgy of the Church of England, but was devised as a kind of an adjunct prayer service, specifically to mark Christmas. And it originates in 1880 in the Diocese of Truro, which was in the Cornish Peninsula there, and it was founded as a new diocese in 1880. They were building a new cathedral at that time, and so it's interesting to note that the Bishop of Truro, Bishop Benson, devised this service to be originally held in the wooden shed that occupied the place that would become the great neo-Gothic Cathedral of Truro, which is really one of the most beautiful modern architectural masterpieces in England. And so when we picture, you know, a glorious Gothic setting for lessons and carols, this, you know, with boy choirs and so forth, you have to imagine that the first time was more like a barn.
Mm-hmm.
And it had sort of, in fact, some of the commentators talked about how it was more like the primitive church kind of experience because of its rather rustic origins, but originally founded as a way to occupy the choristers on Christmas Eve who previously had kind of gone through the streets singing carols at different houses and receiving, you know, sort of alcoholic commensurate gifts as they went.
Encouragement
as they went through the cold winter night. And I can only imagine what that did to the Sunday morning the Christmas morning service. And so the bishop and some of his clergy there said, let's bring it into the cathedral. And they created this new service. In terms of its format, it's drawn from, you know, Bishop Benson was actually a very erudite man. He eventually became the Archbishop of Canterbury, the head of the Church of England in terms of the clergy. And he looked to medieval sources to set the format for it. And the most important would have been the monastic office or prayer service of matins of the monks in the Middle Ages, where they would get up in the middle of the night and they would have nine readings, and there would be, after every third reading, there would be a musical response called a responsory, mm-hmm. appropriately sung as a kind of musical meditation on these readings. And so he took that idea and he lined up a bunch of readings that sort of tell the story of the fall of man through his struggles through the Old Testament, and then eventually his redemption in Christ. And for each of these, there is kind of a response of either the choir singing some kind of a choral work or the congregation singing a carol. And we're kind of used to hearing carols like the First Noel and so forth in church, but really that was not the practice until more or less this point in history when lessons and carols were introduced. So very interesting.
You told us it's around Christmas time. Is there a specific day or a specific time when you would necessarily do lessons and carols, and are there the same lessons, the same carols each and every time?
Very interestingly, well, the original time was Christmas Eve, and in fact, it was 10 o'clock at night on Christmas Eve, so I guess that the goal was to make that the last thing people did before they went to bed. And the practice has variable applications now. In fact, it was adapted from the original Truro version to the King's College version, which became the most famous one. That the first occasion at King's College was 1918, also on Christmas Eve. I might mention too that people have devised other kinds of lessons and carols, for instance, for Easter, and so this is a highly adaptable and format, and it's like localized as well. So their traditions are kind of molded, I guess, to the circumstances of the place.
Without taking it step by step, are there specific lessons or specific carols we should point out here, highlight?
Well, I think that there are certain carols that are very important. For instance, at King's College, the idea of singing Once in Royal David's City as the first carol, which is intoned unaccompanied with a lone soprano voice. Of course, there's a boy soprano in those English chapel choirs for us. You know, in the U.S., you know, it could be that, but also just a single chorister from any of the sections. And so that carol is sort of a signal sound for the season and for this particular service. And the readings sort of culminate usually, not always, with the reading of the beginning of the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And that sort of, which itself sort of tells the whole story of God and the incarnation, and it's such a sort of it's both philosophical and theological at the same time. It's kind of a crescendo to that reading. Yeah.
We're talking with Dr. Timothy McDonald. He is Associate Professor of Music and Director of Sacred Music at Hillsdale College about the lessons and carols. You mentioned King's College a little earlier. What's the significance of the King's College Chapel in the development of lessons and carols?
Yeah, well, King's College, it's founded, it's called, you know, in Latin, the Collegium Regale, the Royal Chapel, Royal College, I should say. And it is one of the chapels royal in England. In other words, it is directly under the patronage of the sovereign, of which there are, I don't know, maybe almost two dozen or so, in the entire country. You know, St. George's Chapel, Windsor would be another example. So it's a very important chapel, and it had a very important music program. And so the fact that this became one of the sort of hallmarks of King's sort of musical establishment was significant because of their expertise. But also, you know, after they started doing lessons and carols in 1918, about a decade later, 1928, the BBC began its annual broadcast, which became, you know, popular eventually internationally. And that more or less popularized this idea of a service of lessons and carols and led to its adoption by, you know, not just Anglican or Episcopalian extractions of the original church body, but, you know, Catholics and Lutherans and various other denominations have adopted it and adapted it to their own purposes as well.
Is it more prevalent in certain religions or certain areas?
I mean, you know, it certainly is an absolutely, you know, traditionally Anglican idea, and its flavor is eminently Anglican. You know, the language of the hymnody is Anglican when we sing it in English. But I would say sometime around, you know, in the 70s and 80s, there was a more widespread adoption by other denominations. And I think it, you know, the lessons were frequently reduced to a smaller number. In many cases, they were reduced. The lessons were reduced and the music was increased and it sort of became more of a concert type of setting. And so it's remarkable that, you know, starting from King's and through the, you know, this, the use of mass media, really, it, you know, the idea, I mean, who could imagine that a religious choral service would become sort of contagious throughout the whole world like this? It's really interesting.
What are those ways, perhaps, that we or anyone would put a, I want to say, unique spin, but how do you personalize it and make it your own?
Well, I mean, we're going to be drawing both from the original tradition and a few of our own things, particularly localizing it with a great American carol like O Little Town of Bethlehem. You know, that's a very well-known carol here. It's not very well-known outside the United States. It is in the English hymnals now, but not to the tune that we know, which was the original tune written in Philadelphia by Lewis Redner at Holy Trinity Church. So we'll be doing that great American carol. We'll also be doing a setting of the Magnificat, which was done in the original setting, hearkening back to the evening service of Vespers,
mm-hmm.
and so the sunset service. And so we're going to sing a Magnificat setting. We're also going to feature somewhat unusually a brass ensemble to accompany us in the carol singing and give us a bit of a sense of grandeur and majesty as we mark Christmas here at Hillsdale College in the beautiful, you know, still new and extraordinary Christ Chapel.
Dr. Timothy McDonnell, Associate Professor of Music, Director of Sacred Music here at Hillsdale College, talking about lessons and carols. Dr. McDonnell, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That will wrap up this special Christmas-themed edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dwight Lindley, Jordan Wales, and Timothy McDonnell. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. The assistant producer of the program is Sam Lair. Until next week, Merry Christmas. I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hello, I'm Shannon Phillips with the McConnell Foundation. As part of Operation Holiday Salute, we would like to take a moment to thank our veterans and the brave men and women who are currently serving in the armed forces. At the McConnell Foundation, our mission is to help build better communities through philanthropy. We value excellence and integrity, using our personnel, facilities, and financial resources to create and support positive change. We are honored to be a part of Operation Holiday Salute on KCNR.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
This is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.